Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
Talking Comics. Welcome to Talking Comics, episode 256. I'm your host, Mara Wood, and I'm here with Bob Ryer.
Hey!
And Joey Pacino.
Hello!
If you notice, Steve's not here today.
What?
What? Yeah, where's Steve?
I hope he has a note from his mother.
Well, no, he asked for an excuse earlier. One of his favorite bands is playing, and it's a very big deal. So,
yeah, special passes and backstage and good stuff.
You know, like some of those kids come to school with like a note from Bruce Springsteen, like, "Hey, I was at the Bruce Springsteen concert," and he'll like sign those. Maybe Steve can get one from Failure here for next week. Like, can you get a note signed, please, excusing you?
Do they really bring those kind of notes to school?
Yeah, they're up on, like, you see them up on Twitter and, like, on the internet every once in a while.
Okay.
And if a kid brought me that note, I don't know what I would do.
Just keep it.
Keep it, right.
Frame it. Sell it on eBay.
Yeah. Like, you're not getting this note back.
Exactly.
Till the end of the semester. Why? Does it take you that long to read it? That's the old joke.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So even though Steve's not here with us today, we still have a lot of comics to talk about and to cover. I don't know about you guys, but my pull list was enormous this week.
Go ahead, Joey.
Mine was, I think I walked in and it was, I was, okay, so here's the thing. Because of the Rebirth stuff, I never know what's going to be on my pull list. So, like, I'll get an email from Comixology or whatever, and it'll be like, "You're getting Power Man and Iron Fist today." And I'm like, okay, light week, that's cool. And I'll walk in, and it'll be like six DC books that I, like, haven't added to my thing yet. So I was like, all right, I'm expecting to just buy one book, and all of a sudden I'm walking out with, like, eight. And then you add on top of that all the books that we read for the site, too, and it was just like, I did not have all the time I needed to get through all of the crazy stuff that came out last week.
I know. And I think I walked out of my comic shop with like $78 worth of books.
Woof.
Yeah.
That's absurd.
It's absurd. A big chunk of that was the Attack on Titan anthology. So not just single issues, but that was there too. So I was thinking, like, you know what? I'm going to have to start making some calls. You know,
yeah.
Who's going? Who's trade waiting? Who do I not care about anymore? Batman.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
Just calling that right out.
Batman and Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
How was the? It's not. I don't see it on any of our lists. But Night of the Monster Men ended.
It did.
Right.
It did.
Yeah. And, I heard good things about it.
It was an interesting crossover. Like the whole point of it, you know, while we're on the topic, whole point of it was like these monsters were representations of Batman. Like each monster was a different aspect of him. I can't remember all of them. I'm actually pulling it out right now to see, because Nightwing comes up with it. He's like, "Oh, I figured it out." Because Nightwing is awesome. But like one of them is Ego. Yeah. And so,
which was probably massive.
Yes, I mean, they're all massive. But the idea that the Ego is the biggest one, and then just kind of I can't remember all the other ones, but the idea being like these almost like seven deadly sins, but like the sins of Batman come through like therapy sessions and how these emerge or whatever. But it's all complex and complicated, and Hugo Strange is involved in so many ways, so
So you're kind of done with Batman, but are you done with Detective or Nightwing?
Hell no. Like, Detective Comics is one of the breakouts for me. I mean, obviously Wonder Woman, but Detective Comics was definitely up there. And Nightwing, I mean, Dick Grayson. So
yeah. So the crossover didn't push you off of those?
No, it certainly did not, even though I couldn't differentiate between, like, all the issues in this crossover felt the same. So there wasn't one that was like, oh, this is definitely a Nightwing one, or definitely a Detective Comics one. They all flowed together really well, so that when you read them in a trade, it's going to feel like one solid comic all the way through.
Mm. So, interesting.
Bob, see, are there any... go ahead.
I skipped Detective for the event, and my store was, what are you doing that? Because I don't want to buy four other books.
And you did the right thing, because those Detective books, like I said, they didn't feel like the Detective books that came in the first arc. So you should be fine.
Yeah. I'll just pick right back up. And they had the January solicits, and Marguerite Bennett is going to do some co-scripting as she gets us ready for Batwoman.
Bennett!
Yes! So, so exciting.
Lock it in.
Yep. It's coming. Coming. It's, you know, we're
next
pretty excited about that.
Best new series, Batwoman. I can see it coming. Lock it in now.
Place our bets.
Did they announce an artist for that yet, or is it just Bennett so far?
Just Marguerite Bennett on the book. I think it's still Eddie Barrows on the Detective.
Right.
But I don't think he's doing it with the Batwoman series. But you never know.
You never know.
It'd be David Finch.
Ooh,
good
no.
God.
I don't think it will.
She'll have swords in her arms.
He's too busy doing Batman.
Yeah.
Bob, are there any that you're dropping right now? Or you're looking to drop?
Well, yes, Batgirl and Birds of Prey. We'll hear about it in just a little bit. That is that is going away.
Wow.
Yeah.
I read in those solicits that come January, they're still up to part six, and they haven't gotten through this because, of course, you have to make it into a trade.
Right.
So there's still not a conclusion. It's the conclusion, but it doesn't sound like it's the conclusion of the arc. No. Yeah. Sad, but I'll just read Gale's and Chuck Dixon's and all the other ones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of how it is. And you know, I'm waiting for... I wanted to see a lot of these first arcs and see whether or not they're worth continuing with, or, you know, trade waiting or not. So one that's kind of on the fence for me right now is Supergirl, which, you know, had its second issue come out. But I can't determine if it's a month book that I have to read or if it's a trade book. Yeah. Tough calls.
Yeah.
But let's go ahead and move into our lightning round and talk a little bit more in depth with some of these books. Bob, I'm going to let you go first.
Oh, yeah.
Joey needs the extra 3 minutes.
The day you call on me first, I'm going to throw up. I'm just going to vomit everywhere. It's been a long time since I've gone first.
Hey, if you're okay going after.
No, I'm not. I like waiting.
Okay.
But I just know the day's going to come where you're like, let's start with Joey. And you're just going to hear, just like everywhere.
We want that on the Google Hangout and video, too.
Video, right? The first day we do video, just call on me first, and I'll just be on the screen, just like Exorcist style, projectile right there.
Technicolor.
Pitch perfect orange vomit.
Yeah.
Wow. You'll have to prepare by eating properly before.
Yeah, carrots, exclusively carrots for 17 days.
Yeah, some yams, you know, something good.
Yep. Something like that. Hey. Let's see. So, Bob, are you ready?
Yep.
No. Okay, and go ahead.
Well, as advertised, Batgirl and Birds of Prey number 3, Julie and Shauna Benson arc by Claire Rowe will probably be my last issue, sadly, because as much as I love the Birds of Prey concept, this series, I don't know, shares too much DNA with the New 52 version, the Chuck Dixon or the Gail Simone runs that I love. And now we're adding, looks like a new origin for the Black Canary on top of the really awful on-the-nose dialogue, so I'm out. Superwomans by Phil Jimenez and Emmanuel Lupacino could have marked another finale for me, as the change in focus of this series still leaves me aghast. But I've read that Mr. Jimenez has asked for our trust, which he's more than earned. Story is still very intriguing, though I'm not thrilled. And Ms. Libuccino's art is good, so I'm in, at least for the time being. Howard the Duck number 11 by Chip Zdarsky and Joe Quenneville is the finale of this wonderfully surreal series, and it certainly keeps the anarchic spirit that it's had all the way through. Now, here in this book, it's so meta. We've got characters Chip and Joe, who they're writers for Mojo's TV version of Howard's life, and they've been certainly making a mockery of this. And they're, by the way, not to be confused with Chip and Joe, the actual artists, because they're sort of purple. And they're on the run from Mojo for the mess they've made of his network and the ratings and Howard's life. Now, will Chip... Will his activation of the power cosmic turn the tide? Will the Iron Punisher eat Spider-Man? Will Biggs the Cyber Cat have his belly rubbed? All this and Heaven 2 in the final issue of Howard the Duck. Two Gotham Academy books out in second semester number 2 by Fletcher, Clunan, Kershaw, and Archer. Olive's new roommate, Amy, has got some real problems going on, as she did in the last time. There's also a mysterious witch club that's begun operations on campus. Lots of fun stuff with maps as well. Then there's Lumberjanes, Gotham Academy, 5 of 6. The party at Louise's has gone very haywire with the lodge just coming to life and attacking everyone and giant cow bone creatures. Just a heck of a lot of fun. One more issue to go. You probably wait for the trade if you haven't gotten started yet. I also took a flyer on Doom Patrol number 2 by Gerard Way and Nick Darrington. And who boy is this a trip. completely bizarre. We're reintroduced to Larry Train, the Negative Man, who's not quite himself. It's inner, outer, hyperspacey. It's just insane, and I'm going to stick around at least long enough to re-meet Rita Farr, the original Elastigirl. So they say that's going to happen. So that's it for me.
All right. Very nice. I am still not exactly sure. Sorry. What to think of Doom Patrol?
I don't think that we're supposed to know what's going on with Doom Patrol.
Good, because I feel totally. I mean. Not totally lost. I mean, I could read a comic and, you know, kind of get the drift, but I'm not a Doom Patrol fan. I don't have that history with the comic or the series or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And there's just so many pieces that I just don't know what's going on. So
yeah,
I'm still buying it.
It is quirky. Mm-hmm. It is weird. The art is very nice. It's very straightforward on some pages. I'm looking at one spread here. It's a 6-panel grid on one side, and this completely loopy, it looks like almost like Jackson Pollock colors thrown on a page in the next one. What? As there's the negative zone, I guess, in the DC universe, where the Negative Man construct is flying around past a couple of people having a chat around a table with one looks like Jabba the Hutt's little brother and some guy with a blue square head. We just go into, I don't know, Disneyland at the end? Looks like something kind of Wacky Land. No idea, but like I say, I'll hang around till they bring the rest of the old team back together and see where they're headed.
Yeah.
Obviously, Gerard Way's done his homework. That includes the really old book as well as Grant Morrison's, and he's channeling both right now, which is...
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's cool, yeah.
And then Superwoman.
Superwoman.
Where is this going?
I have no idea. But I will say that it took me a couple of pages to be like, why does this feel different? And then I realized that Emanuela Lupacino was on art, right? Yeah. And I was like, oh. And I just felt like I could breathe a little bit because the first two issues with Jimenez was just so packed with like images and inset panels and everything. Yeah. So like I was like, oh, this is like a step back. I don't know, man. I'm going to stick with this one. I don't know if it's like I like Lana Lang or like, I don't know. I don't know. I'm into it. Let's run with it. I'm cool. Yeah. Superwoman's.
Yes.
It says so right on the cover.
Hopefully she comes back.
Yes. Because that's why I think.
Oh, she has to. Come on.
It's Phil, and I trust him, but the solicitations are very coy about
who's
mentioning anything.
Yeah.
So if it's going to happen, maybe it's the last panel of issue 6 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's the return of Lois Lane. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
So, question. Have either one of you guys read Action Comics from this week?
No. Uh-oh.
Okay. So, this is an issue where the Lois Lane from pre-New 52 is ready to go back to work. She's tired of being on the farm. She's tired of being, you know, whatever. And decides to go take Lana Lang's job. Or, sorry, Lois Lane's job at the planet. So she
as Lois Lane?
As Lois Lane. So she just shows up. And, of course, things are a little bit different. So, you know, she's like, offices, which way? And trying to, like, log onto her computer and everything. But it's just interesting to see that. So I'm like, oh, I hope they're setting this up for conflict for the other Lois Lane to come back.
And maybe they won't bring her back now. Because I don't – they're not going to bring back – New 52 Superman.
Surely not.
Are they?
Surely not.
No, he devolved into Shirley Clint. Not. And don't call me Shirley.
Surely not. I love that. That's fantastic.
Surely not.
Surely not.
But I would love a comics universe that had two Loises.
I mean, I guess that makes sense. If I had to pick between two Supermen and two Lois Lanes, I would pick two Lois Lanes too.
Yeah. So I think that would be an interesting conflict to see how that pans out, but yeah, she totally just takes the job, and you know, she's a little bit older, a little bit different than the other Lois. So things are, you know, someone's gonna figure out something.
Does she know that Super Lois Lane is dead, or whatever's going on with her?
Melted.
I can't remember. I think she does, because otherwise, why would she show up?
She's just like, ooh, an opportunity.
Yeah.
Think of all the great time off they can have.
Yeah.
Send one to work and stay home and go back and forth. It'd be great.
Yeah.
I did like Lupacino's art, though. It's great. Like Emmanuel Lupacino's art. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really cool.
Joey, are you ready?
Yes, I am.
For your lightning round. Okay.
No vomiting.
I'll try not to.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, Reborn, number one, Mark Millar, Greg Capullo, Jonathan Glapion, and FCO Placencia. First of all, I think the draw for many going into this book is going to be Millar and Capullo on the book. And in terms of the book, the two deliver exactly on what that quote-unquote team-up would promise. From a story perspective, Reborn is a book about life after death, specifically a life of adventure and fantasy and dragon-slaying Warcraft after death.
Yes.
That's right. In the world of Reborn, when you die, you get whisked away into a new life filled with high adventure and battle axes. I think that's the case. I don't know. We'll see. Much of the story focuses on Bonnie, an old woman in her last days, and her fears of dying and her feelings of loss and regret from a life filled with tragedy. When she does pass away and the quote light switch goes off, as she says, she finds herself in the aforementioned world of Reborn, but her role in this new adventure might be a bit bigger than she's ready for. Capullo's art is massively epic, as you would think, and Glapion's thick inks and Placencia's vibrant colors carry that heightened naturalism throughout. It's a kinetic and punchy book that's definitely worth checking out. Glitter Bomb number two, Jim Zub and Jibril Morissette-Fan. This book is wild. We talked about issue one about a month ago. The creature horror mixed with the gender lens narrative of women in Hollywood makes for a brutal story on both sides. Farrah continues to grapple with her new powers and continues to struggle with her flailing career and personal life. A final multi-page spread of Farrah flipping through the TV channels and taking in the absolute garbage that's now on the airwaves drives home the emptiness of her modern life and perhaps pushes her further into the grips of the monster inside of her. It's a great new series, and the back matter from Holly Rachel Hughes is both revealing and really distressing in a lot of ways too. Peepland number one, Krista Fowles, Gary Phillips, art by Andrea Camarini and Marco Lesko. Peepland, naughty, naughty. Titan's new crime imprint, Hard Case Crime, dropped Peepland last week, a new series set in late 80s New York City. The Peepland of the title refers to the exotic dance business that our protagonist Roxy works in. When a strange tape ends up in her position and the owner of that tape ends up DEAD dead, things get super noir and super crime fiction-y for Roxy. I actually really dug this book and all of its gritty, grungy glory, and I'm a sucker for hard-boiled crime in comics form, and the art is killer too, so definitely worth checking out. Warlords of Appalachia, number one. So there's been a second civil war and the rebellion lost, but Kentucky has seceded and is still holding out. And now it's like this rural dystopian landscape with hunting, and they're all like, the mountains remember. Our hero, Cade Mercer, is just trying to protect his son from creepy blue forest creatures and scavengers and the like. Meanwhile, the American government is cracking down and the president is a creeper. Yeah, this book is pretty crazy. Pair it with Briggsland from Dark Horse and you've got a season of pseudo-political dystopian thrillers going on. And I'm really into it. So yeah. great new series from Boom. And finally, New Superman number 4, Gene Luen Yang and Victor Bogdanovic. There's like some cool, albeit totes obvious twists in this book, and the whole Freedom Fighters versus the state-sponsored Ministry of Justice League heroes is an interesting angle. But I wonder if I'm still on this book because I want to support the writer and the mission more than I'm actually enjoying it, which is kind of a bummer to say.
Yeah.
So this is a first issue that was really leaning on the Chinese culture element of the book, but it feels like a super Western interpretation of what that would be, which we talked about way back when we talked about issue one. So I don't know. I'll probably finish out the arc and reevaluate. But I don't know. There's parts of it that I like, but I don't know if it's going to carry me to pick it up week after week. So yeah. That's me. I'm done.
Yeah, well, that goes back to our discussion at the top where, you know, what with all these incredible rebirth titles and stuff that's coming up from Civil War II, how do we make those decisions?
You know? Yeah. Amen.
It's hard. Yeah, I shouldn't have to think this hard.
Like I was reading Sam Wilson Cap, just to flip over to the Marvel side too. Like yeah. I was reading Sam Wilson Cap because I like the character and I wanted to support Spencer and I wanted to support, you know, the mission of that book. But, you know, 6, 7, 8 issues in, I was just like, why am I still reading this book? Like, I don't know if I buy into the story anymore. And am I actually enjoying it or am I actually just trying to, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Where do you draw that line between wanting to support a character and a character that's obviously important and a mission for a book that's important, but the it's just not grabbing you in the way that a story ought to, you know, after all. So like, I don't know. I don't know what that line is. So I love Gene Luen Yang and I love the concept of this book, but it's just not hitting where I want it to hit. So I don't know.
We'll I'm with see. You. If you're not enjoying the books at the price they are relative to everything else, there are so many great books that we can find and sometimes in smaller doses somewhere else, little bits of something.
Yeah.
For twice a month, even at $3, it's $6. It could be two other books.
Mm-hmm.
Another title that might deserve support too that's not getting it. Who knows?
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Hard choices. Okay, so I'm going to get started on my lightning round and I'm going to kick it off with a manga volume because we haven't talked about manga in a while. So the 37th volume of Skip a Beat came out in September. Yes, 37. We are still going strong. This is a series by Yoshiki Nakamura, and it follows our heroine Kyoko as she does her revenge career as an actress. I guess I should give a little background because we are 37 volumes into this series.
Yeah, a revenge career. I like that.
her ex-friend who mooched off her for years is a singer. And she got fed up with him, so she decided, I'm going to be bigger than you. And she goes into acting. And turns out she is a very talented actress. So the whole series kind of follows her acting career as she's breaking out in drama roles and working for a company and things like that. So in this volume, we kind of move away from her revenge career mode with Sho and into her relationship with her mother, who is a lawyer who on national television denied having any children.
Oh.
Yes. So that was
revenge.
I know. It's like so it's one of those things where you can tell the heartbreak in the character and her response to it we haven't gotten to that part yet because that's kind of, you know, what this volume concentrates on is the build up to that. But her reaction to that revelation from her mother is going to propel the series forward. How is she going to reconcile her career with her relationship with her mom? Is her mom ever going to come around? And how Kyoko leans on Ren, who is the attractive actor from the same agency, how their relationship is going to deepen, because she keeps going to him every time she has a crisis.
Oh, no, don't do that.
Romance. Well, you know, he's a good guy, but he's not being 100% truthful with her. Okay, so moving from manga, Han Solo, number 4, came out by Marjorie Liu, Mark Brooks. Yes, this is still the Dragon Void run, and Han is picking up his rebel contact, and turns out there are more than one, but he didn't know there's more than one, so who do you trust? It's high action. It's got a lot going on. The artwork is incredible and detailed, and you just kind of like want to press your face up against every panel. It's just so, so rich, and like I said, there's just so much space detailed in it. Definitely been loving the series. One of the best ones to come out from Marvel. And then Monstress, number 7, by Marjorie Liu again and Sana Takeda. And this is a comic that I really like to read, but I don't always understand what's going on completely, which is one of those where I do the pattern where I read it each month and then read the volume after it's come out. And, yeah. So this kind of follows like what I did for The Fade Out or Velvet or things like that. So unfortunately, I have not gotten around to reading volume 1 of the series again. So, but still read it, still enjoyed it. Micah is still trying to figure out how to get the monstrum out of her that is literally like destroying her body and making her eat flesh. Still running around. Yeah, it's crazy. And again, this is one of those series that even though I don't necessarily think that it reads best month to month, I still read it month to month because the artwork is so detailed and incredible. And I love her little fox friend, Kip, I think is his name or her name, who always grabs her tail and looks so scared. and even though I ran out of time, I'm going to hit real quick Lazarus, number 25, by Rucka and... Oh, sorry, Greg Rucka and Michael Lark. so this one continues the story of the Cole from this arc. And we open up on the front lines where the Carlisle forces led by Sonya Bittner are reclaiming territory. And, you know, that's interesting and everything, but the real plot part to this issue is Joanna telling Forever who she is and what makes her special. And no, you're not actually our, you know, biological child, although we kind of made you. So you are our, you know, family member, but you aren't. Also, here are all your body parts. So, like, a room full of, like, torsos and limbs and organs and things like that. And Forever's like, what is going on? So it's really interesting to see how Joanna is vying for that position of permanent family head. Right. And whether or not this secret she's sharing with Forever is something that benefits just Joanna or benefits the whole family. So, Lazarus, gotta get on it.
I'm sure it's going to come up before the end of the year.
It's, I mean, it always does.
So, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. That book and Monstrous and Insects, like, those are the ones that I'm just like, why am I not reading this all the time?
Why you know, aren't
I'm like,
you?
So, I'm so behind on that because I got a lot to do, man. I'm a busy person. Life, man. That's why.
Yeah. True. So
the books that I'm always like, oh, I regret I'm so behind on Lazarus, and I regret not like starting immediately with like Monstrous and Insects and The Fix too, the other
that new issue came out this week.
Yeah, like those are the books where I'm just like, oh, why did I not start with number one and like hold myself to that? So there's a lot I gotta catch up with before the end of the year.
Yeah, definitely.
It's around the corner.
Yeah, man.
So we didn't talk about this before, but are there any news items we want to hit on? Anything we want to bring up? I personally don't have any.
I didn't see anything of major import this week.
No.
You know, we don't want to spoil last night's Supergirl for anyone yet.
Oh, I have not watched it.
Me either, but I do kind of know what happened because it got spoiled to me.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah. Like, oh, thanks. The one night I didn't watch it on, you know, on first run. Like, all right, yeah, well, I kind of knew that, but still.
There was like Marvel pitched those, that like resurrection angle, and there's gonna be an Iceman book and like a Weapon X book, everything following the Inhuman versus X-Men war thing that they're doing.
Can't wait for that one.
I do hold out hope, as I've talked about on the show. X-Men has been my lifeline for, you know, when I started reading comics, but at this point I'm like not reading any of them, so like I don't really like, I don't care, which is the worst thing to say. But like someone sent me like Iceman's getting a book, and I'm like, cool, I guess.
Yeah,
like,
I don't think I would want to read an Iceman solo book.
Yeah, Cyclops on the other hand, man, I will read a Cyclops book regardless. But you know, maybe they'll start doing right by the characters. I don't know. Who knows? But we'll see, I guess.
We can only hope. It is a big franchise still. The movies did make money. The last one wasn't great, but took in some cash. The books are all selling, just not the enough of them were the right ones, maybe?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the Rogue One trailer?
I have actually resisted watching it.
Okay.
Because I want to be surprised on December 16th.
Okay, so I will not say anything. I won't say any theories.
I'll take my headphones off.
No, because, I mean, they're just far-fetched theories. And I'm not going to. I'm not going to, Joey, I promise.
Theories, eh?
Yes, the sort of theories. And a lot of it has to do with...
Do it. Okay. I'll take my headphones off.
How about this? If you are a listener and you want to talk in-depth theories on Rogue One, email me, mara@talkingcomicbooks.com.
Okay. Oh, you can talk about it. I took my headphones off.
No, because there are a lot of people who don't want to know anything about Rogue One, because with Star Wars, I mean, we come to Star Wars with a lot of baggage. Like, we know the Skywalker legacy. We know a lot of the Legends information that we're hoping to see and look for threads in the movies and things like that. But with Rogue One, with it being the first Star Wars story outside Skywalker line movie, a lot of people they want to be completely surprised by it, like they were for A New Hope or Star Wars back in 77. So that's kind of why a lot of people are avoiding trailers or avoiding spoilers or talking about it and things like that. So
yeah,
I just want to say I'm still excited. Bad guys looking bad. Good guys looking cool. And Rogue One Catalyst novel comes out next week. Or sorry, next month. Next month.
Where does the novel fall into chronologically with the movie? Before, after, during?
I believe it's before. Like a prequel to the movie.
Okay.
And it's by James Luceno, who wrote the Tarkin novel, as well as other Star Wars books in the Legends universe. And while we're also talking about Star Wars and Star Wars books, Ahsoka came out last week, and it was amazing, by E.K. Johnston. And I got both the hardback and the audio version, because.
And you had that long drive today.
You
could listen in the car.
I did. And the audio version is narrated by Ashley Eckstein, who is the voice of Ahsoka from Clone Wars and Rebels.
What?
Yes. So it is perfect.
Wait, this was a novel?
This is a novel, yes.
You read a novel in the last week?
Yes.
Oh my God, you're so good. You're so good.
It was like Sunday night. It was like 12:30 in the morning, and I'm still reading this book. I'm like, I'm finishing this book right now. I'm not going to bed until this is done. And sure enough.
Oh man. Kudos to you, man. That's wild.
Yeah, but if you get the audio version, you can speed it up. It's like 1.5 or something.
1.5? That's so funny.
So it's really weird to hear Ahsoka's voice going that fast. So.
It's like the Evelyn Wood speed reading, but for audiobooks.
Yes, yes.
That's good. That's good.
But if you're interested in Ahsoka and what she was doing between Clone Wars and Rebels, this is definitely the book you need to pick up. It takes place pretty soon after Order 66. and the rise of the Empire and the hunt of the Jedi. So if you've been watching Rebels, you know about the Inquisitors and what they do to Jedi and what they do to Force-sensitive children and things like that. So that all factors into this book. And I believe it's written as a young adult novel, but it certainly doesn't feel like that. Kind of like how Lost Stars felt like just a regular novel, not necessarily a young adult novel. So,
Mar, are you excited for Rogue One?
I'm just kidding. I'm super excited. I've pre-ordered my Rogue One Catalyst novel. The X-Wing pilots and the space war story of Star Wars is my favorite. Jedi are cool and everything, but there's just something about a smuggler, something about pirates, something about like that camaraderie. Yes. Like that is what I enjoy most about Star Wars.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. So Poe's my boy. Like in the his squadron and the resistance and everything like that. Like those are the stories that I find most interesting. And I don't know if I'm just burnt out on the Skywalker stuff or the Jedi or Force sensitive things. I don't know. Hey, that's why Star Wars is so multidimensional.
I'm inclined to agree because like the Jedi stuff is like knights and all that, like, you know, chivalry, old epic stuff. But there's something like gritty about a dogfight and like a space opera, like getting up into the stars and boots on the ground or whatever. It really makes that Star Wars stuff click for me, too.
Yeah, and that's why the Han Solo series has been so good to read, because right now the Star Wars books are the main title, which follows the Skywalkers. Darth Vader just ended last week, and the Force Awakens adaptation. So Han Solo is kind of where we're getting the outside force, the gritty stuff. So definitely refreshing, at least in the Star Wars universe. One more Star Wars thing while we're on the topic. Because you guys just let me go, so I'm just going to keep talking about Star Wars.
We'll get to Wonder Woman later. It's the Mara show. Let's do it.
Because I did mention that Star Wars Darth Vader just ended, number 25. Kieran Gillen and Salvador LaRocca did the entire run. And this was something I was talking with Matt about, where we don't see that too often. In
the best, right?
Yeah,
best.
Like beginning to end, same creative team. And I mean, I think Batman pretty much stuck with the same creative team, but they had some fill-ins artists here and there. So 25 issues, I mean, that's a pretty good run. So I'm very proud of them for this. But so this final issue, it's huge. Like it's, I don't know how many pages it is, but it's massive. And there's a ton of variant covers. So if you're a variant cover person, you're going to go nuts over this. I don't know what variant I got, but it's weird. So this issue 25, kind of wraps up the whole series. Now, this whole series takes place right after the Death Star blows up. The Emperor is like... Spoilers for, like, all of Star Wars. The Emperor is super...
It happens three times.
If you got some big weapon, they're going to blow it up. It's going to happen. The Emperor is super pissed off at Vader because, like, what the hell are you doing, Vader? Why'd you let the rebels blow this our super weapon up? So the whole series has been Vader kind of redeeming himself in the eyes of the Emperor while also kind of, like, covertly trying to, like, undermine him. So at one point in the series, he's going against this guy who the Emperor more or less hired to make replacements for Vader. So, like, Force-sensitive, cybernetic, crazy people. One of them is Amon Calamari with, like, robot legs. Like, Admiral Akbar with robot legs. Picture that. And a lightsaber. And he also befriends an archaeologist, a droid archaeologist, who has murder droids. And they work together to kind of build up their own little... pool of money so that they can kind of do their thing. So, you know, Vader is literally stealing from the Empire. And this woman who has aligned herself with him is helping him do it. And she's like, well, you know, when the time comes when you have to kill me, because I know you have to kill me, do it with a lightsaber because it's quick. And so that's the kind of relationship that they've had this whole time. So this issue kind of wraps up all that stuff. and this has already been announced, so it's not a spoiler, but it's already been announced, and Karen Gillan will be writing it, but there is going to be a Dr. Aphra series.
Nice.
And Dr. Aphra is a droid archaeologist with the Murder Droids. And I am so excited about this and having Karen Gillan continue to write this character as she moves forward from this comic. There's also a coda at the end. So do y'all remember in Attack of the Clones where Anakin Skywalker gets all sad that his mom died and decides to like kill off an entire tribe of sand people?
Yes. Yes. Oh my God. Is this going to go where I think it's going to go?
So it kind of flashes back to kind of that moment, and Vader goes back to Tatooine and he kind of kills some more sand people, and a survivor witnesses all of this. And so he's like, what the heck is going on? So he's trying to like convey the power of this person, and it's all nonverbal. So it's all just the artwork and the idea that Vader has more or less like harnessed the sun in his weapon, and how he's like this demon who can slay an entire tribe. So they build like a shrine to him, and all these sand people have like made a Vader shrine that they're worshiping in the desert. And it's amazing.
I was going to say, is it going to go the route where like there's like a vengeance-seeking sand person? Yes. Like, I'm going to avenge you.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome. But no, they totally are like Vader worshippers in the Tatooine desert. So
that's amazing.
Can't wait for them to address that again later.
So it's like the cargo cult where those people in the South Seas were building airplanes out of bamboo and palm trees and whatever. They built their own little Vader shrine out of whatever they had.
It's like massive, and they built like a bonfire with it, and they're just like bowing in front of it, and got like a Vader priest like doing some stuff in front of it. So.
It's Wicker Man. That's what it is.
Probably. Well, I don't know. Probably.
Maybe we started on Wicker Man.
Okay, well, that's been Star Wars Corner. I'm all Star Wars out for at least the next 30 minutes.
I'm very excited for Rogue One too. And I'm like, I remember being a Star Wars kid and just like, I'm so excited that these things are like part of the zeitgeist again.
Yes.
You know? Because it's been a while since the prequels, you know, it's been a decade since the prequels. So like, Rogue One is exciting, and Force Awakens was huge, you know, so I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
And I don't know how many times. This Christmas, right?
Yes.
December 16th, man.
Yeah. Mark your calendars. Gonna see it 3 times. Maybe 8. I don't know. I saw the last one 8 times.
I'm gonna see it 3 times, maybe 8. That's the jump.
This is like, 3 is kind of like low end. 8 is Force Awakens level, so somewhere in between.
I saw Cap Winter Soldier, I think 4 times, Avengers 5 times. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the most. The most I've done.
Yeah, I saw Winter Soldier 5 times, 2 of which all by myself, because people they were sick of seeing it with me.
Movies by yourself is the best.
It's like, see, spread out.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Like, do you really want to be talking during the movie? Come on.
No. I want everyone to leave me alone. So, yeah, it's
lounge
ideal.
Lounge seats in the Lowe's by me in the AMC. So it's like you just lean back. Big leathery seats. It's awesome.
I'd be asleep in 10 minutes.
Oh, dude.
All right, well, let's move on to Wonder Woman.
Sure.
So, Bob, you want to go ahead and give us the rundown?
This is issue number 8, and it is sort of a standalone interlude. Still Greg Rucka, but Bill Quee Everly, who did a great job on Shaft a while back with David F. Walker for Dynamite. Yeah. And if we, I think I certainly thought, I'm sure a lot of other people did, this is going to be the origin of the Cheetah, and it isn't. It's more a backstory of Dr. Barbara Minerva.
Mm-hmm.
And you see her as a young girl. She's lost her mom. Her dad is not supportive of her flights of fantasy and her willingness to be more than just a little girl. And she moves forward. She becomes a renowned archaeologist. She's doing all sorts of important stuff. And without spoiling too much, what you see here and what is very, very poignant and touching for the series moving forward, she is a complete champion for the Amazons on their culture. So the fact that due to other circumstances, which I'm sure we'll see as we move forward, that she ends up as Wonder Woman's arch enemy for the most part is now really, really something special.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed this. The art was great. Greg Rucka's story, of course, really, it's not even you took a breather by backing away from the other story. It heightens both the year one story and the story in the present. So
yes.
I think it was a great, great place to stick this issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Joey, did you read it?
I did.
Okay, good.
Yes, I did. And it's similar to kind of what I said like last a couple of weeks ago when we read the end of the Lies story arc in the jungle with whatever was going on with Utsuku or whatever the thing was called, you know, where I was like, I want to get back to that year one stuff. And this was exactly what I wanted. And this was the vibe that I loved. I love the story. I think that, again, I have no familiarity with these characters. And the story that Rucka tells, with, you know, she wants to engage in these fantasies, and she wants to be an adventurer, and she wants to be all of these things, and her, you know, dad's giving her, like, I love those stories, because then they always end up being amazing women, and I'm just like, yes, you know, and there's just something about that I really enjoy, and I loved Bilkley's Evelie's artwork.
Yes.
I got super, like, Samney vibes from it, Albuquerque vibes from it. Like, I was just really digging everything. And, like, the kind of the globe-trotting pages where she's, like, going to different countries and it kind of blends into one another. It was just awesome. Mm-hmm. I really love this interlude. It was great. I'm glad that this character is part of the story that Rucka's telling. I don't want to go back to the Lies. I just want to stay in the past. Keep me here. I love it so much. And I don't know. I mean, we'll see. There's another issue coming out, what, next week or whatever? Like, I'm so glad that we get it, like, so often.
Yeah.
But I just, I'm loving the year one stuff, the kind of origin stuff so much. I almost wonder if Rucka is too, because it's almost the story that he wanted to write in a way. And it's just on a different level, I think, than the Lies narrative. Bajukabuku thing stuff that's going on down in the jungle, you know? So, I really loved it. And I fell in love with a character that I'd never even been familiar with at all. I don't know if this story is in line with the origins of the cheetah before. I don't know.
Depends which cheetah we're talking about.
So, like, the good version of it?
Well, the first one.
Different cheetahs.
Yeah. First one basically dissociative identity disorder, where she thought she was a cheetah. And so she put on a cheetah costume and stole things.
Okay.
And she was Priscilla Rich, though.
Mm-hmm. So she was like a society.
Ersatz Catwoman, cheetah woman.
Yeah.
Yes,
exactly. And then George Perez, I can't remember what issue it is, but they go into her origin story.
Is it 7, maybe?
Yeah, it's the beginning of, like, that second arc where she's in the jungle and on death's door, basically, and more or less promises herself to this plant god, and because of her impurity, you know, it's basically ruined her life. So they don't go. I don't think they do it this much humanizing before this issue.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been such a glorious reimagining of this character. She now is not just a bad guy, not just a not just a demon possessed creature. She's a human being.
Yes.
And now all those actions that she may have taken, if depending on how Lies turns out, which of these stories have been true and not, and they're all now tinged with sadness because she probably couldn't control herself.
No.
So, oh, man.
I know. And, like, how important the Amazons were to her. Or are.
Yeah.
They still are, I assume. And how much she needs them to exist and needs them to live. And, you know, I'm wondering if she's wanting to get to Themyscira just as much as Diana is. Because that is what Holy Grail
and
is.
And then she can... Diana can take her to Redemption Island.
Yes. Yes.
Ooh.
So where she can, she can become a good person again.
Yes. That's the Marston Rucka way.
Yeah. Rucka's doing an amazing job of, like, drawing these parallels. Like, we talked about with the sisterhood of Themyscira and the kind of warrior sisters of that culture and the brothers in arms of of what was going on with the oh my God, what's his name?
Steve Trevor.
Steve Trevor. I was like, Nick Steve? No, Steve Trevor. Steve Trevor, you know, and those parallels. And then here you have, as you're saying, like, Minerva's, like, interest in wanting the Amazons to exist because she wants to be that bold warrior woman, you know? And, like, I think the way that he's drawing these parallels and juxtaposing these ideas is just such an elevated way of using the mythos that makes this book so much more than just, like, you know, sword and shield and fantasy and sci-fi. You know, we talk about how do you make Wonder Woman work? Well, this is how you make it work. Like, these are concepts that are so universal, right? Wanting to be bold and not being able to, or finding a community in quote unquote battle, you know, like, it's just so valid. So, like, what's the problem? You know, like, just go. So
just
I love it.
Good. Yeah.
When I was waiting to get his autograph on the on Thursday at the Comic-Con, he stopped the line, and I was two people from him because he had to do an interview with somebody for a radio show. And he was describing how before he wrote his first Wonder Woman issue, it had been 3 years of him trying to figure it out, that he could do it all properly and pay the character justice. And he made a great point, and that's where it clicked for him, when he discovered, just in really thinking deeply about it, that Diana makes her origin beyond the regular from clay, that we always talk about. Batman has no choice but to be Batman. His parents are killed, and in that moment, he's Batman. Kal-El doesn't get a chance to say, I'm paraphrasing Greg here, oh, can I stay and die here with you on Krypton? They just shoot him off on a rocket. He has no choice in the matter. Diana chooses to leave paradise.
Right.
To do the right thing.
Right.
Whoa. Hadn't thought of it in quite that way before, but it's so true. And that was his hook for the character and everything else that would follow from that.
So good. While we're on the topic of Wonder Woman, I don't know if you guys noticed, but there is a Comixology sale on the Wonder Woman. So the sale ends October 24th, and it is up to 66% off digital Wonder Woman comics. And we have a question from Nico on Twitter, at Hamburglar, who said, did you see the Comixology Wonder Woman 75th sale? Any recommendations from the sale beyond Perez? Seems light on Golden and Silver Age.
Well, Silver Age, don't worry.
You're not missing anything.
No. Granted, it is. There was my introduction to the character, but I enjoyed her much more in the Justice League books than her own solo books, which were mostly miserable.
Yeah.
As Mara's discovering in rereading them.
Kaniger.
Well, don't curse on the air, Mara.
Oh my gosh.
Kaniger is just a bad word.
Yeah,
so many, we've talked about him at some length on your show a while back when we did our Carolyn and I were guests with you, where there were moments where when Dr. Marston was sick and about to die, where his wife championed herself and Olive to write and other women to write the book, and Kaniger was editing it, jumped right in. No, I'll do it, and ruined the character for 2 decades. Fired Harry Peter, the artist who created Wonder Woman with Dr. Marston. So Kanagar is a cuss word.
Yes, yes.
Even though it's more than four letters. the Phil Jimenez run is certainly something to grab hold of and embrace.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly Gail Simone, certainly Greg Rucka's. I have a really soft spot in my heart for John Byrne's couple of years on the book. He went very deep into Wonder Woman's history, including trying to sort out what happened in the crisis and how Wonder Woman could still be in the Justice Society, and he found a way to do it in a very elegant way.
Yeah, it worked.
Yeah, there are a lot more good Wonder Woman runs than bad ones. And people somehow think that it's all been terrible for years. There are lumps of terrible, don't get me wrong. There's so much good stuff. What about you, Mar, if you were going to pick something out of the ordinary?
So I'm looking through, and when it comes to the Perez stuff is there. We have Wonder Woman from 1987, 1 through 40 on sale. Nice. Then it picks up with 147, so 107 issues later.
Wow, so that skipped past all the Diodato stuff.
Yeah, which is fine.
Right, and the Byrne stuff?
It looks like it.
So you're picking up, I think, with Eric Luke and Yannick Paquette.
Yes, so you're coming in there. And it goes from 147 to 150, and then jumps over to 195.
So no Jimenez.
Yeah. So there's that. But
Gail's
the Rucka
run. Gail's and Greg's there.
Yes. Yeah, so Rucka, I see.
Judy Picou.
They weren't bad.
No, she wasn't bad. No, she wasn't bad. So it looks like Wonder Woman goes from 195 through looks like most of the Rucka stuff. I'm looking on Comixology right now.
And then we pick up with the new numbering again, right?
Mm-hmm. And so they go back to, hold on, I gotta scroll up. So with Wonder Woman Volume 3, which starts in 2006 with Wonder Woman number 1, where Donna Troy is Wonder Woman. So you get, you know, those issues are like $1 a piece. And I think all of that is there. So that's pretty interesting. But they also have the New 52, the Superman Wonder Woman series, and something that I'm excited about because I have not read yet and it's on my list, The Legend of Wonder Woman, art by Trina Robbins. Is there 99 cents
fun.
Each?
They're fun, though, as we heard Christy Marston being not so happy.
Yes, so I'm actually looking forward to reading those. And as far as classic Wonder Woman, you have All-Star Comics number 8 there. Sensation
it's
Comics
three
number
pages
one.
Of text. Sensation,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and then Wonder Woman number 1 through 7.
Okay.
And then it picks up at 178 with the new Wonder Woman. And you get some of that. 178 through 182. And then it picks up 212. So back to
So just in time, 212 and then up through the crisis, I guess, which is 300 something or other?
No, they drop off at 222. So, okay. I mean, it's a pretty large chunk. It's probably their entire Wonder Woman library that they have digitized on Comixology. So as far as recommendations, I would definitely say read those 7 classic Wonder Woman issues. I would definitely pick up Sensation Comics number 1 and then Wonder Woman's 1 through 7.
Right, because Wonder Woman number 1, Wonder Woman was a quarterly.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually expands on the origin because it's an all Wonder Woman issue, so you get a much longer version. That's where you first see her born from the clay in that famous shot. So that'll give you a lovely read on where those characters were at their creation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jumping forward into the Emma Peel Wonder Woman? I don't know. That's a big leap.
Yeah, so it skips a lot of that Robert Kanagar stuff. I guess none of it was worth digitizing.
Oh, come on. Amoeba Man. I had to put Amoeba Man in there. Or maybe the whole Wonder Family, where she was Wonder Girl and Wonder Tot and Wonder Woman all at the same time.
Yeah,
somehow.
Who are all the same character, by the way.
Yes.
They're just spliced together, so that's why it was weird.
Nice.
So I would skip New 52 just because who knows what's going on there. Mm-hmm. Definitely pick up the Gail Simone stuff because that's interesting. And then the Rucka, Wonder Woman Rucka. And, I mean, Perez is obviously a must-buy. I don't know. It's all good. It's all good stuff. Not, I mean, like all good, but all decent. Some of it is great.
I have to say, I do own some of the single issues from the Emma Peel period, the Mike Sekowski, Danny O'Neill, and the Sekowski solo. I was a fan of Mike Sekowski's art on Justice League, so it's okay. I was a fan of the Avengers, and the book is, you know, I Ching, and the rest of it's just not very good. But I did buy all the trade paperbacks when they came out, just to say I had
them. I have them all. I have them all, too.
Yep.
So, I mean, they're interesting. We just have to be aware of she will cry.
She, a lot.
A lot. She does not have any powers. She is trained by a very racist portrayal of a Chinese man.
Nice.
So just be aware.
She shoots a lot of guns.
She does.
She shoots a lot of guns.
She wears very fashionable clothing. And from my memory of what I read of that run, she doesn't break her own bonds, which is a big thing for me. If Wonder Woman is shown chained up, she should be breaking those bonds. In, like, the next panel.
That was the purpose of it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. So
we should do a book club on those.
Oh, man, that'd be fun. That would be... Yeah, tell Steve, put that on the top shelf book club.
Yeah, we have one of those coming this week. I'll plug that right now. We will be talking about Gail Simone's Clean Room 1-5 this week.
Ooh, very Halloween-y.
Oh, yeah, very... My problem is everyone else bought the trade. I've been month to month.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to watch what I say very carefully. Because I don't want to spoil anything. There are some really interesting surprises coming for the people who haven't read it. Though I've talked about some of them here. Hopefully it didn't spoil anything here. But for those who haven't read it, that is an ultra creepy, twisted book. So catch up before we record on Friday.
All right. Excellent. Let's move on to, I think we've Wonder Woman enough, nerded out about Wonder Woman enough.
Never enough.
Star Wars and Wonder Woman.
Yep.
Hey, we spent 5 years not talking about Wonder Woman.
That's true.
It's very true.
In essence. So, good to go.
So let's talk about a couple of books that Joey wants to bring up. Let's start with Black Light District, 6 issues. What the
Black
heck is
Light
that?
District, 6 issues, one shot. Wasn't even on my radar last week. I didn't even include it on the pull list. I think it might have been Matt Young, one of our writers, was like, hey, can I write the review on this book? It really impacted me, like, strongly. And I was like, oh, yeah, go for it, whatever. And he sent me his review just to read before he published. And he's talking comics and visual, and I'm like, what the heck is this book even about? So I picked up a copy and I read it, and it was a total trip, man, like cover to cover. Like, okay, so Black Light District, 6 issues, is created by Jesse Blaze Snyder. There's a whole cadre of writers and artists that do this book, because basically it's 6 individual stories based on 6 individuals that are collected together on something called the Black Light District EP. And when you open up the comic on the first page, it says, hey, so while you're reading this book, listen to this music. So they give you a website, www.blacklightdistrict.co, and you go to it, and there are 6 tracks. And each of the tracks correlate to one of the stories in the book. Not only do they correlate to it, but the actual text of each comic book story in the book are the actual lyrics to the song. So what you do basically is you listen to the song and the lyrics play, and the lyrics you just follow along with the images that follow. So I was like reading it, and first of all, you have to slow down, right? Because when you read comics, I don't know about you guys, but like when you read comics, you kind of barrel right through it, right? Like you like go through that, those dialogues and those caption boxes, and you look at those pictures and you just flip right through in sequence. But I was like, I'm going to read this right. I turned on the music and I played the songs, and I waited for the lyrics to track through, and I turned the pages as the lyrics changed. And it slowed me down so much. Sit with these images. And one of the things that Matt talks about in the review is, like, when we think about comics, we think about visual storytelling. but it's always in our head. Now, when we add the oral element, A-U-R-A-L, the oral element of the music too, like it's almost a totally different experience. And each of the stories is like super weird. There's like the first one is like zombies and politics, and then there's like space travel, and some of them are super poignant. There's a great story about, you know, this creator of a kind of golden age superhero gets like gypped out of his money kind of thing. Like, I don't know, you don't really understand the story because it's lyrics, it's music. And it's emotive and evocative in a way. So it was a really interesting reading experience. It was totally different. It's strange. The stories are weird, sci-fi, hard, kind of fantasy, also realistic too. So it was definitely a trip from cover to cover. It was definitely unique in the way that I've read comics in the past. And as an experience, it was like something that I'm glad I stumbled upon, you know, mm-hmm. in a way, because it was just something that was totally unexpected. And, you know, I love music and I love comics. So putting them together in a way that wasn't just, you know, a lot of writers now will include like, hey, or Kieran Gillen does this all the time where he's like, hey, putting this comic together, this was the music we listened to the playlist. But this was different. This yeah. was like, the comic was actually driven by the music that was happening in terms of the vibe and the mood and in terms of the actual text and in terms of the story that was being told. So as a project, I appreciate every facet of it. I have no idea what was going on in half of the stories, but I know when it's time to appreciate something. And I definitely appreciate Blacklight District 6 issues for what Jesse Blaze Snyder and his team put together here.
So I have a question. Who yes. did the music?
I could look it up right now. I don't know. I think it was him too. Snyder, okay. Definitely.
So he wrote the music for the artwork.
Confirm that.
Okay. Because I
think what it was he had this music and mm-hmm. then he said, okay, I want to make comic book stories based off of this music.
Yeah.
And then they kind of took it and ran with it that way. So he like gave it off to writers and artists.
Okay. And so they interpreted it their own way.
Yes.
Okay.
Blacklight District 6 issues.
Because I'm going to tell you, I read this comic, but I did not listen to the music with it.
So, yeah.
Yeah, because it was one of those things like, oh, weird, playlist. Okay. Because I'm used to Kieran Gillen giving a playlist before. Or I think there's a playlist that goes with Harrow County, but don't quote me on that because I don't remember if I'm getting that mixed up with something else. So I always skip it because I'm not really much of a music listener.
Right.
It's just not my thing. I'm not interested in it. You know, it's like whatever. I don't understand pop music these days. So I skipped over it, and now I'm like, you know what? I think I missed out on that experience. So obviously, I have to go back and reread this comic with the music to see what exactly did I miss out on.
So here's the about page on blacklightdistrict.co. About. Blacklight District is the home studio of American singer-songwriter Jesse Blaze Snyder. The walls of his office studio have long been lined with bombastic images of Jesse's favorite comic book characters, inspiration for making art that can save the world. What always made comic books so compelling to Jesse was the high stakes, often the literal end of the world. Jesse was determined to figure out a way to bring that same sense of scope and danger to music. In 2014, UK-based singer-songwriter Will Knox was ready to take up Jesse's four-color challenge. Living in the Blacklight District studio for 2 weeks and being forced to watch nothing but comic book movies and The Daily Show, Will got a crash course in geek culture and American politics, producing track after track inspired by the images literally jumping off the walls at them every day and the info on the TV keeping them up at night. So inspired by the end of result, Jesse rushed 6 mini comic books into production to coincide with each song, featuring mind-blowing collaborations with Jason Pearson, Chris Burnham, Andrew Dahlhaus, J.K. Woodward, Andrea Tam, David Witt, Michael Spicer, and Phil Hester with Eric Larson and Chris Eliopoulos, kicking old school colors and lettering. The comic book Impears is comic book EP is a sincere love letter to the entertainment mediums Jesse and Will most love, comic books and music.
All right.
Ooh.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Very different. That's multimedia.
Yeah, that's our little bit of Steve for the night, because yes. I feel like yeah. Steve would be totally into that.
Yeah, yeah. And you've got another comic you want to bring up that I did not read. I don't think Bob read either.
Oh, Great Lakes Avengers?
Yeah.
Great Lakes Avengers number one. Yet another post-Civil War II book that is clearly the consequence of Civil War II without the context. So anyway, Great Lakes Avengers number one, Zach Gorman, Will Robson, and my favorite colorist, Tamra Bonvillain. All right. On Great Lakes Avengers. This is one of the bigger Marvel books coming out last week. And when we were emailing out our list, I was like, I feel like we should cover one of these. So I like scrambled and read it last night. I'm not familiar with the franchise at all. Okay. I'm not like a Great Lakes Avengers, like hardcore fan or whatever, but you know, I'm a sucker for those kind of like B-list, D-list characters on a team kind of story. And in a lot of ways, I think Great Lakes Avengers fits in that Superior Foes, Next Wave, Ant-Man kind of. So Great Lakes Avengers basic premise is like these lawyers after Civil War II get word that like the Avengers trademark is now open because of whatever happens in Civil War II. Stark Industries or whatever cannot maintain the trademark, so it's going to go to the next person that recently applied for the Avengers trademark. So these lawyers go and visit Flatman, who's on the Great Lakes Avengers, and they're like, hey dude, back in like 1991 or whatever, you applied for the Avengers trademark, so it falls to you now. And they work out a deal where the Great Lakes Avengers are reinstated and become a thing. So issue number one is basically like Flatman going back and trying to re-recruit and bring everybody back. So he gets Big Bertha. He finds Doorman, and they're looking for Mr. Immortal. There's a whole situation with him, and there's this great moment where they're like, what about Squirrel Girl? And they're like, yeah, we called her, we sent her text, and she hasn't answered. And it like hard cuts to Squirrel Girl hanging out with like Captain America and Miles Morales and Nova, and it's like, oh, she's like big league now. She's not like Great Lakes Avengers status. And that's pretty much what goes on in this book. The artwork from Robeson is like really great. It's got that kind of poppy vibe to it. It reminded me a lot of oh my goodness, not Runaways, New Warriors. It reminded me a lot of New Warriors way back in the mid-2000s, right? This kind of like, team of D-listers trying to be heroes going forward. I think it's a cool premise. Again, I feel like here's the thing. Putting this alongside the other Marvel Now book that we talked about last week, Jessica Jones, I really don't see where we're going after Civil War II. Like, Jessica Jones, one hard end of the spectrum. Great Lakes Avengers, the other end of that spectrum, you know? And that's cool. There's a diversity of the line there, which is great to see. But without that context, I really can't enjoy these books in a way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because you don't know why they're there.
This was fun. It looked great. Gorman and Robson and Bonvillain, you know, it's a well executed book. I don't know these characters, and they got me laughing along with them. But I need more context. Like, say what you will about the previous decade of events coming out of Marvel, but at least you had a. Like an umbrella, you know, with after Secret Invasion, we did Dark Reign. So all of those relaunches and all of those new books had like a theme and something. And I kind of understood where they were coming from. Even if the event was delayed, I kind of understood what was going on. You had the heroic age after Fear Itself. And even the Marvel Now books after Avengers versus X-Men was kind of the first Marvel Now was kind of like, you know, a hard relaunch points. And let's actually like, you know, have a line of books that focuses on heroes and puts us in a new place. Now it just feels like I don't know. Just maybe it's the frequency of it, or maybe it's because Civil War II itself hasn't had kind of a focus to it, that it just seems random. A book like Great Lakes Avengers, you know, like I already have Squirrel Girl. You know, I don't know if I need to read Great Lakes Avengers kind of thing. You know, and then I look compared to Jessica Jones, and I'm like, what? You know, I don't know. And the other two books that came out this week that I didn't get a chance to read were Mosaic and Solo. Two books that, like, Mosaic got positive reviews, but I was like, why am I going to read this book?
Mm-hmm. Why do you care about this character? No.
Right. Great Lakes Avengers kind of has a niche that it's trying to fill, that kind of quirky D-list, you know, book that Superior Foes filled for so long and things like that. But I don't know. I just wasn't. I saw Mosaic on the counter, and I just had no compulsion to pick it up.
Mm-hmm. Well, with the event not concluding, and who knows if it ever will, it may just keep getting delayed and moving, adding issues to it as we go. There's no incentive to say I need to see what happens, because when I read that last Secret Civil War, what is it? Civil Wars. Sorry.
Civil War II, yeah.
Yeah.
And they introduced that Mosaic character.
I want to see what happens.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And now, no. When you think at the end of the first volume of Kelly Sue's Captain Marvel, where in the last panel there was Kamala Khan with a picture of Carol on a refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
I want to read about her when her book comes out.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm going to need to see these people doing something.
Yeah.
First, and now we'll all go back, I guess, unless the scavengers have picked them all off the shelves. But it's a consequence now, and they did it to themselves, of just not having everything ready in enough time. And that's too bad, because some of these could be very good books that we're not going to give, and we're supposed to be giving the chances. And if we're not, are the regular folks out there, with money being tight and so many books coming out, and Marvel putting out 120 books a month or whatever they're putting out.
Lord.
Something like that. It was over 100 last month, I believe.
Yeah, and books like Great Lakes and Jessica Jones benefit from having recognizable names.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Great Lakes Avengers has a history, so people will pick that up. Jessica Jones has a history, and people will pick that up. But a book like Mosaic or Solo, books that, again, Mosaic got very positive response from, you know, critics and stuff, but are people going to pick that up with no context?
No.
There's no hook. You got to have a hook.
Yeah.
But anyway, Great Lakes was fun. Worth checking out. Maybe issue one if you're into that kind of thing. But again, without the context, it was just a little like, this is enjoyable, but does it matter kind of thing? So,
hard to tell.
It's hard to tell.
Let's hit one more book. And this one is one that that Bob's going to talk a bit about.
Speaking of Civil War things.
Oh, man. Oh, gosh.
It's Power Man Iron Fist number 9 by David F. Walker, Sanford Green, and Flaviano.
Flaviano.
I'm sure there's more to his name than Flaviano. I assume it's a him. It may not be.
Flaviano. It's like Prince.
He has a glyph instead of a name, actually. The artist formerly known as Flaviano. Anyway, in this issue, Carol and her crew have come to arrest Luke Cage for thinking about breaking into a prison to get Danny out of there. And Danny's staying in prison to make a point about this predictive justice thing. And this doesn't all sit very well with Luke. And, well, doesn't cause anything but trouble. Things go from bad to worse. Carol ends up blasting Luke through the prison walls. Prisoners get out left and right. Things go so haywire that you end up with Carol's team, basically. Mockingbird's using some device to help herself with Songbird's powers. Freeze half the prison. Storm does something and freeze the other half. Supervillains galore breaking out of the place. Luke actually saves Carol from a supervillain blast. Is laying there in a heap. And we get a wonderful speech from Danny to Carol, which, if you'll indulge me, after Luke's laying there in a heap, and she asks, "Well, Danny, how is he? How is he? Wasn't all this part of your prediction? Didn't you see all of this?" And she says, "You don't understand. I don't understand. Then make me understand, Carol. Explain to me how you saw all of this happening. Explain what Luke ever did to you to justify all of this to make you not trust him. If a vision or a dream or some kind of damn prophecy of something that might happen is enough to make us all turn on each other, then what's the point of all the things we fought for together?
Mm.
And she stands there and has nothing to say. Mm. Absolutely nothing. She is kind of overcome by this. She begins to maybe finally get it. I don't know how that's going to translate into the other series or the new series, the mighty Captain Marvel, where she's a big hero at the end of the day somehow. But as we've talked a lot about, some of these sidebar books have been so nuanced in their approach to this conflict, and the characters act in a way that we're used to seeing. They're aggravated with each other, with Carol particularly, because they would be. They're her friends.
Mm-hmm.
And you, when your friend does something dopey, it's good to call them out on it.
Yep.
And we needed some more of that. This was absolutely great. Did anybody else take a run at this one?
Yes.
Okay, Joey.
I agree with a lot of things you talked about. A lot of the same kind of like high points for me. Danny's speech was definitely something that I locked into too. I think a lot of the response that I saw on Twitter and talking with some of our contributors too was like, this issue, what is this, issue 9?
Mm-hmm.
Number 9,
yep,
was so clearly like David F. Walker and company just being like, all right, let's wrap this up.
Yeah.
and let's get to the next thing. And then they even have like those moments where like they're clearly like teasing and dropping elements for the next arc.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our characters getting whisked away or teleported or whatever.
Yep. Senor Magico has got problems.
Senor Magico, yeah. But with the actual like confrontation between Luke and Danny and their group and Carol and her group too, it's so clearly like, all right, let's have them fight, let's have them talk, let's wrap it up, you know. And it so clearly felt like a by the motion issue in a series that has been so good. You know, and Power Man and Iron Fist has been such a unique and dynamic new series coming out of Marvel with these characters that this issue kind of felt out of place in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And I know that and it felt like they had to wrap up this thing that they found themselves in because of this larger line-wide thing that was going on. Now, it wraps up in a way that, as you're saying, Bob, is exactly what we would hope that the Power Man Iron Fist book would be, which is like Luke and Danny both being like, Carol, what the hell are we doing? You know? And I think that, I'm glad it's done for them so that they can go on and keep doing what they're doing. And I just had this brain blast while you were talking that what if Carol is the hero of the day because she saves Captain America, but Captain America is, spoiler, Hydra.
Yeah.
So we're just like layers and layers of Carol just being like elevated for bad reasons and like, wow, all of that. That's what's going to happen, man. That's what it's going to be. They're going to be like, Carol's going to be like, I saved Captain America.
And everyone's going to be like,
because you foresaw it.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's what's going to happen. But anyway, Power Man and Iron Fist, still an amazing book. This issue is so clearly like, let's wrap up the Civil War II stuff so we can get on to our next stuff.
Yeah.
It's still executed very well, and there's some great moments with Bobby and Mockingbird in particular. Yeah. Bobby Morse is Mockingbird. I don't know what I'm saying. Bobby Morse and Mockingbird.
Songbird.
The birds. The
Melissa
birds.
Gold.
Melissa Gold. That is great, and I want more Melissa Gold in the books. I think she's a great character. And they have some great moments, and they were weird moments because I was like, this is Power Man and Iron Fist. What are we doing with like this bird duo, you know? But, they were great because they were both like, hey, bad things are happening. Maybe we should just take care of that. And that's kind of what these Civil War stories always kind of end up being like, guys, just go save the day. Why are you fighting each other?
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, I love the book. I love Power Man and Iron Fist so much as a book, and I love what Walker's doing. that after I finished this one, I was like, thank God that's done. Let's move on to something else. So
something a little bit more happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not so happy. Like, I love putting my heroes through the ringer, but something a little less like heroes punching heroes.
Yeah, I like it when Dr. Doom puts them in the ringer.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Whoever just teleported away Senior Magico.
Yeah.
All right. So I think
Mr. Fish, maybe.
That's going to wrap up our comics discussion for the week. Bob, I saw on Twitter that you and Bobby sat down for the fifth anniversary.
Yes. Steve was there too for a bit.
He was on his way.
Well, he was there to do some commiserating and some celebrating as we all stopped. The three of us stopped down at our local pub, toast each other's good fortune. And it's hard to believe when we began 5 years ago, Monday, the 17th, I guess. Was that 17th? Yes, that was Monday. Who knew? It all sprang, you know, as we've talked about, out of Bobby wanting to do this. We had done a movie podcast that had literally dozens of listeners. But and that had sprung from all of us getting to know each other at a pub quiz. And then it was Jackie Turner from Talking Games and Jay, they opened up their house to all of us, and we started hanging out and got to be friends, and that led from one thing to the next. And when we began, it was Steve and Bobby and Brian Verderosa from our adventure show and from Talking Movies, and Brad, who was on the show at the beginning, and then it had Stephanie, and then it you two guys, and we created this lovely community of people. And just thanks to everyone. We would all do this just to talk with each other without any of you listeners out there.
Mm-hmm.
But that, as when we had our meetup at the con, when so many wonderful people showed up to sit for a little while outside in the rain on the roof of a bar, and just the dynamics of the conversation as people moved into other circles and different conversations. You want to be part of the five different ones that were happening around you. Was also great when you see what passes for the comic book communities on the forums and other places, and even in stores that you go into and see the level of discourse and see what we've managed to accrue around us here, sort of the way planets form with rocks smashing into each other, and that's what we did here.
Nice.
It's lovely. It really is lovely. And for me as well, at least for tonight's show, I'm the old timer. Steve predates me on the show by some months. I've managed to have a really lovely third act, thanks to all my colleagues and all the people out there in the audience. So thank you for that.
It's good to know. You know, I obviously have not been around for 5 years. I mean, I've been alive for 5 years, but not... not alive on Talking Comics radar. But the years that I have been, it's been a very welcoming community and very special and positive. So that's you know, something, you know, pat on the back. We'll continue to talk about things we like and, you know, talk about things we don't like about comics, but always try to respect others' opinions and their personal beliefs when it comes to comics and entertainment.
Yeah. Mara, we're coming up on we're almost 5 years contributing.
Yes.
What are we, four and when did we start? June 2012,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So was that 4 years, four in a couple of months, four and change?
Yeah.
See?
Yeah, we've been around. And how things have changed.
Oh, yes.
They put us on.
Yeah, they gave us the microphone.
That has been a great breath of fresh air for us. I have to thank you both for that.
Well, thank you. Well, that's going to be it for this week's show.
Aww.
And I know. We have to cut it off. We have to move on. I have to edit the podcast.
The one thing I will say, because someone just tweeted at me and reminded me, is that have you seen Chris Samnee posting those alternate covers, variant covers of Bucky and Natasha for the Black Widow series?
No.
Oh my God! If we get Bucky Nat again, I will literally just lay on the floor right here. and just fetal position, just hold myself in joy. Bucky Nat.
Yes.
Like, this is like amazing. And like someone like did like fan art or something of Bucky and Natasha like raising Copic, the little cosmic cube girl. And I was just like,
yes.
Just like I melted into myself.
I think that's the comic I want.
Yeah, that's my happy. That's my happy note to end on today.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So, ignore the playground with Luke and Jessica and Danielle.
Well, okay. Let's see what happens in Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
Well, that will be good at the end.
Thanks, Bob. For just.
So, listeners, you can send us comments or questions through our email, podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. You can also tweet us @talkingcomics. You can check out talkingcomicbooks.com for our reviews, news, articles about comics, video games, and TV shows. I think that the TV podcast for the DC episodes have started back up with Return of Flash and Supergirl and all that, so definitely look for that. We have several comic podcasts, Top Shelf and Legendary Runs, which this week is Lock and Key with Melissa Megan.
If
you are a Joe Hill fan or a fan of creepy stories involving children and haunted houses, more or less.
I am not a fan of that.
Well, still listen, even if you aren't. It's amazing. D&D podcasts, video game podcasts, everything. So, Joey, where can listeners find you?
I am on the Twitter and on the Instagram at Joey Braccino, BRACCINO.
Very nice. Very nice. And Bob?
Still at Bob Ryer at TalkingComicBooks.com.
Excellent. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram, but I don't post there often, at Megamaramon. So, for Bob?
Good evening.
And Joey?
Good morning.
I'm Mara Wood. Until next time, to be continued.